You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
Over the past two winters, we've spent facing the COVID pandemic. One small bright spot, both in 2020 and 2021, flu season barely even showed up. It seems that the same precautions that have helped prevent the spread of COVID, masking, social distancing, have also helped to reduce other viral infections as well. But this year, we've started to let our guard down, and now it seems that the viral dam has finally burst open. Welcome to KCBS In-Depth, broadcasting throughout the Bay Area and streaming on the Odyssey app. I'm Keith Menconi. Flu season has arrived early, RSV is hospitalizing children at an alarming rate, and other viral illnesses are on the rise too. So why does everything seem to be surging all at once? Well, at least part of the explanation seems to have to do with the COVID precautions we've taken over the course of the pandemic. You might have heard the term immunity debt. It's the notion that as we've sheltered ourselves from COVID, we've been exposed much less often to other viruses as well. And as a result, our immune protections to those other viruses have waned. So now that society is opening back up, we're more vulnerable. Now, this dynamic is fairly well understood. But some take things a step further. They ask, if our COVID precautions a year ago are leading to more infections now, is that a sign that we've done more harm than good? Have all these precautions actually weakened our immune systems? Well, up ahead on the program, we're going to hear that the answer to that question is a resounding no. But to understand why, we're going to have to dive deeper into the science of the immune system. First up, we're going to take a closer look at exactly what an immunity debt is and how the concept could help explain what we're seeing in our crowded pediatric hospitals. For that, I'm going to welcome on now Dr. Michael Rose. He's a physician specializing in internal medicine and pediatrics at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. And he just put out an opinion piece for Slate Magazine titled "Immunity Debt Was Worth It," in which he writes that, yes, children are getting sicker now because of COVID precautions, but goes on to explain why those precautions on balance were, well, worth it. Michael Rose, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks so much, Keith. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you. So just to start by painting the picture somewhat, this is a viral surge that is really causing a lot of concern here in the Bay Area. We're continuing to hear about how RSV and other viral infections are straining hospitals. You yourself work at a pediatric hospital in Baltimore, and I'm sure that you've been seeing examples of this yourself. And a lot of people are trying to figure out, you know, what's causing this? Why are we seeing this now? You argue in your piece that immunity debt is a big part of the answer. Help us understand what you mean when you say that.
Yeah, the term has gotten a lot of controversy to some amount, but I think when I talk to my fellow clinicians, we all share this sense that it's not totally unexpected when for the past 2 years related to COVID precautions, we've seen huge decreases in regular respiratory viruses, things like RSV and influenza. And it's the basics of immunology that the first time you get infected with some virus tends to be the most severe. And also you're the most prone to getting infected. And so we just have more, in my opinion, have more groups of kids who have never seen or been exposed to RSV and other similar viruses. So normally that would be all of the one-year-olds and then a few of the two-year-olds and then a couple of three-year-olds versus this year, you know, basically all the 1-year-olds, all the 2-year-olds, and all the 3-year-olds have never seen, their bodies have never seen RSV. And so they don't have any antibodies prepped and ready to help fend off the infection as easily as if they had seen it before. And then adding a second layer to that, many people question why infants would be more prone to disease this year, as you know, infants always have never seen RSV. Of course, one factor could just be there's more RSV and so more infants are getting sick, which probably is part of it. But it seems we know that infants get their immunity from their mom, and RSV antibodies are fairly short-lived, actually. And so they kind of inherited their immunity debt from their mother, most likely. So they did not get those helpful antibodies through the placenta while they were in the womb, or through breast milk afterwards, that help reduce the risk of infection and reduce the severity of infection.
Yeah. And so just to drill down a little bit more on how this is all working, what we're talking about is the precautions like masking, precautions like remote work, so that social distancing, isolation, maybe cleaning surfaces or cleaning our hands more often. Through all those precautions, we have made it less likely over the past 2 years that we would confront those illnesses. And, you know, this is a it has been a lot of work. It's been very draining for a lot of people. And a lot of people have, you know, chafed under the obligation of masking, under the expectation of masking. And so here we are. The society is relatively open at this point, and I think people are very happy to see that. And so to have this outcome where now that we have put our guard down a little bit, we have these viruses flooding back in, reaching higher rates than they have in years past, in some ways, you know, it's pretty disheartening. And a lot of people are asking the question, was all that hard work that we did for nothing if we have just sort of delayed these viral illnesses and now we're seeing this, you know, really challenging outcome in these hospitals that aren't getting overwhelmed by any means, but are certainly facing a strain and certainly also seeing a lot of children that are having some pretty tough goes of it. So you write, Michael Rose, that in fact, looking back, even knowing what we know now, all those precautions that we took, even given the fact that it did develop this immunity debt, you say it was worth it. Explain that to us.
So part of my job, I work as a pediatrician, but I also work as an intern. So I take care of adults and kids. And I think anybody who worked in an ICU in March or April of 2020, can quite clearly say that there wasn't an alternative choice implementing these precautions at scale. That before we had vaccines and therapeutics, but especially vaccines, without these precautions, COVID simply would have overwhelmed hospitals and health systems to, you know, an even a greater degree than it already did. And so we knew that there's so people predicted there was potential risk of some rebound increase in infections after precautions were eventually eased. But that risk definitely was outweighed by the benefits of slowing COVID-19 transmission until we had an effective vaccine that could be used widely. That's very critical in reducing the severity of illness and frequency of illness that we now see from COVID. That's the main reason that I think it was worth it, is that we had no other choice. There were freezer trucks in New York City because the morgues were full. We had hundreds of patients well over 100 patients at one point in our health system on ventilators. Opened multiple extra ICUs. And so that the precautions were very much required to prevent that situation from going from terrible to calamity. And we're paying back some of that debt that we accrued. But overall, I think that it was a good debt to accrue at the time. There's one other nuance that I'd like to add is that while we're seeing increases in viral infections in pediatrics this year, you know, there were large decreases the last 2 years. And so in general, delaying the age at which a child gets their first infection with RSV especially is a good thing. So we know that, you know, two-year-olds get less sick than one-year-olds, and one-year-olds get less sick than newborns. And so even though many of these more kids were sick at the same time, which added a lot of healthcare system strain, it's very possible that overall the amount of morbidity and mortality from these viral illnesses when averaged over the 3 years is going to be less than it would have been otherwise.
Right. So it seems like we're not talking about more cases overall, likely just delayed cases. Speaking once again to Michael Rose with Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. So you discuss in your piece the fact that, you know, there are many different kinds of interventions that we can take to reduce the risk that we are going to get sick, get some kind of pathogen in our bodies. And some of those are interventions that we're probably going to keep doing forever, you know, like treating our food or treating our wastewater. We're never going to stop doing that. But, you know, as we've seen, we are in this interesting situation where folks had been masking for a while, had been taking that precaution. Now we're letting that guard down. And so we see the impact of that. We see the sudden rise in cases. So it's a little bit of a complicated story. I wonder if there are any lessons that you draw from that. You know, now that we've been through it, what can we do to keep ourselves safer in the long term, given that there is this immunity debt that we can rack up?
Yeah, thanks so much. It's a very challenging question. I very much agree. So I think the key things are notifying ways that we can prevent infections sustainably over the long term. And when it comes to respiratory viruses, I'm hopeful for improved ventilation. I'm hopeful for improved paid sick leave policies and changing our culture around staying home when you're sick. And I'm hopeful for improved hand sanitary practices in the long term. But the thing that I continue to be most hopeful for is vaccines. They're an immunology's free lunch, so to speak, in that they're a way to give yourself protection and pay down debt without having to ever have an infection. And so, of course, that means COVID and flu vaccines, as well as regular childhood vaccines. And hopefully on the not-so-distant future, there is the high potential for an RSV vaccine being available. And then when should we put on these precautions temporarily and accrue some debt that we're going to have to pay back? Things like masking, distancing, and avoiding large crowds, et cetera. I think there are a few times where that makes a lot of sense. First is whenever your local health system is really starting to become overwhelmed to try to bend the curve, and because we know care is worse for everybody when staffing is not adequate, supplies are not adequate, et cetera. The other is when someone is transiently facing increased risk, whether it's due to an upcoming surgery, it's their first cold and flu season as a baby, or they have a booster that's just around the corner. And that makes sense to accrue some debt because it's going to be cheaper to pay back in the future.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a complicated picture that you're putting out there, but I think that we're all getting up to speed on it together and trying to internalize those lessons that have been presented to us over the past few confusing years. So we certainly thank you for that. We have been speaking one last time to Michael Rose. He is a physician specializing in internal medicine and pediatrics at Johns Hopkins. His opinion piece for Slate is Immunity Debt Was Worth It. Michael Rose, thanks so much.
Thank you, Keith.
This is KCBS In Depth, your weekly deep dive into the events and trends shaping life in the Bay Area and beyond. I'm Keith Mancone. Today on the program, we're taking a closer look at the science of the immune system to help understand why viral infections like flu and RSV are surging this year after two relatively mild winter seasons. So far, we've been talking about this term immunity debt, the notion that with less exposure to a pathogen, over time, our immune defenses can wane, making us more vulnerable when we're exposed once again. Now, while health experts for the most part will readily acknowledge this dynamic, the term immunity debt has become somewhat controversial. And that's because of the conclusions that some are drawing from it. Again, it's those questions that we raised at the top of the program. The thinking goes, if COVID precautions last year are leading to a surge in viral infections now, does that mean that more exposure to viruses actually makes our immune system stronger? And on the flip side, when we take precautions like masking or social distancing, are we actually weakening our immune systems? Should we want to get infected? Well, again, on all fronts, the answer seems to be a resounding, unequivocal, no. Up next, we're going to explain why that is. Just to make sure that everyone is following along here, we're now shifting from the big picture questions of why are viruses surging overall to the smaller picture questions of what does this all mean for my immune system, personally. To walk us through it, we're going to hear next from Dr. Karen Landman. She's a senior reporter covering public health and infectious diseases for Vox and has written about this topic. Here's that conversation. Dr. Karen Landman, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me, Kate.
So we've been talking about immunity debt so far on the program, but for this next section, there's actually another term that we're going to have to bring into the conversation as well, because it touches on a lot of the questions that people have right now about what makes the immune system stronger, what makes it potentially weaker. And that term is the hygiene hypothesis. I know that this is something that you've covered in your reporting, so let's start there. What is the hygiene hypothesis?
Yeah, so the hygiene hypothesis is this idea that overly clean environments don't allow children's immune systems to get the education that they need to respond adequately to infectious organisms. And so, the idea is that without that education, and I'm kind of using scare quotes when I say education, because that's really a very complex process that happens with interactions between sort of the microbes that kids swallow usually, and the interactions between those microbes and their growing immune system. So in any case, the theory goes that without that education, the immune system doesn't really learn how to respond appropriately to sort of invaders. And so it compensates for this by overreacting, and that overreaction is what underlies allergies and asthma and a whole host of other problems of immune system dysregulation.
So that is a hypothesis that was put forward a number of decades ago. Now it seems like some folks are extending that thought to include some of our COVID precautions. You know, the thinking goes that if we have been exposed to fewer viruses over the past couple of years because we've been taking all of these precautions, perhaps that too could have some long-term implications for our immune system and how it functions. So in your view, how well does that concept extend to the realm of COVID precautions?
So let's back up for a second and talk about what we're talking about when we talk about the hygiene hypothesis. I think what we're really saying is that our microbiome is something that we build when we are very young. We start building it, and it continues to protect us over the course of our lifetimes. Now, what is a microbiome? It is the set of the billions of tiny, tiny organisms, bacteria, viruses, yeast that live in our guts and our respiratory tracts and on our skin. And combined, these organisms help in a lot of ways with our immune system, in addition to some of that education and training that they give us early on and throughout our lives. They outcompete some of the bad guys, and they help help us break down a lot of the food that we eat. They're really, really important for our survival. You know, in experiments, animals raised without any microbes at all are much less healthy than the ones raised with microbes in their system. So we need these things to be healthy. The question is, what part of our microbiome is actually keeping us healthy? It turns out that most of the immunologically functional microbiome is actually in the gut. So meaning the stuff that we eat, the stuff that we take in by mouth and swallow, and the stuff that then goes on to live in our guts, that's the part of our microbiome that is really the most functional part in this whole hygiene hypothesis. That's the part that is doing the immune system training and all of these other protective things that help keep us healthy over the course of our lives. And the most information and research and data that we have about the most important part of that microbiome is about bacteria. There are viruses and yeasts there as well, and fungus, but we know a lot less about what they do than we do about what bacteria do. But what we do know about viruses, it doesn't seem to show that they are nearly as important for our health as the work that bacteria are doing in this space. So that's one piece of this that I think is important to keep in mind here. Also important to keep in mind, although we do have a respiratory microbiome, meaning we inhale bacteria and viruses a lot, the role that those germs have and that those microbes have in our immune health seems to be a lot less than the role of the ones in our guts. And the third important thing to keep in mind here is that all of the microbes that are functionally important for our immune system's health, they're all non-pathogenic microbes, meaning they're not microbes that cause diseases. So all of this put together, we need microbes for our health and to help support our immune systems and keep our immune systems running smoothly and responding appropriately. But the ones that are helping us are ones that aren't causing disease. They're mostly ones that enter our digestive tracts, and they're mostly not viruses. So colds are not included. Cold viruses are not included among the set of microbes that we would normally think of the ones that help us and that are really playing an important role in this hygiene hypothesis. So that, I realize that's a long answer to a short question, but that's one of the main reasons that a lot of immunologists and specialists are now saying, no, colds are not a good thing for you to get. They're not going to help keep you stronger.
Well, when it comes to immunology, there's no such thing as a short answer, so you can be forgiven. Real quick, I'm just going to reintroduce you. Speaking right now to Karen Landman. She once again is a senior reporter covering public health and infectious diseases for Vox. And just to sharpen this up a little bit, I'm going to bring in the perspective of Dr. Aaron Ben-David. He's an associate professor of medicine at Stanford. He wrote an op-ed piece earlier this year for the Wall Street Journal, and he was giving, I would say, something of an opposing view to what you're putting forward, essentially saying that the effects of all of these COVID precautions that we have been taking is in some ways undermining our immune defenses. He wrote, quote, "Many measures implemented to control COVID-19, including distancing, isolation, lockdowns, masking, travel restrictions, and deep cleaning, are poised to reduce microbiome diversity in profound and lasting ways." So he's essentially worrying that in the long term, given our lack of exposure to as many pathogens as we had been exposed to earlier, we could expect less healthy people. It sounds like in your view, there is a disconnect in terms of what pathogens actually matter.
Yeah, and I just make a small adjustment to the language there and say which microbes matter. They don't all matter equally, and there's not more value in the microbes that you acquire in the office, at the mall, in a movie theater, in a different country, on an airplane, in a school. There's not more value for your immune system from those microbes than from the microbes that you just acquire at home, hanging around with your dog or walking around your neighborhood. In reality, the way that, you know, what we know about microbes in the microbiome and the ones that seem to help enrich our immune systems are themselves enriched by the things we eat, the animals that we live around. So, you know, the ways to enrich your microbiome are to eat fiber-rich foods and eat fermented foods like kimchi and yogurt, to have pets or, you know, live on a farm. These kinds of things are their data to show that people who live these kinds of lifestyles have rich and diverse microbiomes in immunologically meaningful ways, which means that, you know, although it felt often like we were living in a bubble during lockdown or even, you know, when many other things were open, but even just schools were shut down, it might have felt we were living in a bubble, but we really weren't. We were still having a lot of exposure to the kinds of microbes that are really important for us to have regular exposure to for immune system health. So I really don't think that that's correct to imagine that just because we weren't able to access certain parts of our world that we couldn't, you know, eat kimchi, eat yogurt, you know, walk around our neighborhoods and get exposed to the same kind of immunologically useful microbes that we were getting exposed to pre-pandemic. What we were preventing ourselves from doing was getting in contact with pathogens, which disrupt your microbiome because they get you sick. They require your immune system to go into overdrive. They may cause symptoms that get you treated with an antibiotic. And they also open the door for bacteria to actually cause super infections, sort of secondary infections to originally viral infections that might lead to you actually needing antibiotics, which is bad for your immune system because it depletes your microbiome. So all of, you know, the protection from pathogens was good for our immune systems. It just did leave us immunologically naive, as your other guest has argued. And that means that on a population level, we are just more likely to overreact a little bit more than we might have, you know, at an earlier time in our world to infections that we are exposed to on a regular basis.
Yeah. Well, and so I like the fact that you brought in some action items that people can think about in terms of improving their own immune defenses, their own microbiome, whether it is interacting with animals or whether it's eating those healthy, good bug-rich foods like kimchi. But just to put a very fine point on it to end things out, you know, if somebody has the question, does it make sense for me to intentionally infect myself to improve my immune system over time, infect myself with a virus or some other potentially dangerous bacteria, what is your answer to that?
No, it does not. Pathogens are never good for us to intentionally expose ourselves to, because first of all, you don't know what flavor of immune system you have sometimes until you test it. And you may be a person who really reacts badly to not just COVID, but to any kind of infection, whether viral or bacterial or fungal. You just don't know the specifics of your immune system until sometimes you test it, and you don't want to test it if you don't have to. You know, we're also learning about a lot of post-infectious problems, things like on the spectrum of long COVID, that probably are more common than we'd realized in the past. And to subject yourself to the possibility of developing one of those syndromes without any need to doesn't seem like a good idea. I think if you really want to strengthen your immune system, the best things you can do for yourself are, number one, get good sleep. Rest does make a difference in your immune system's ability to respond well. So get the rest you need and eat a variety of foods. It's part of this is about, you know, getting the vitamins and minerals your body needs to make the stuff it uses to fight off pathogens. But part of it is also, as I said, maintaining your microbiome, feeding the good bacteria that are in there that you do not acquire by exposing yourself to illness, but by, you know, eating a variety of foods and being out in the world and, you know, breathing air and just doing what you do. I think the best advice I would give somebody is to let themselves have the contact with the good germs that are out there by eating a variety of foods and living in the world, and try and stay away from the bad ones.
All right. Well, that was a very helpful deep dive into our immune system and what we need to know as we face these various viral onslaughts. We've been getting that from Karen Landman, once again, a senior reporter covering public health and infectious diseases for Vox. Karen Landman, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. For KCBS and In Depth, I'm Keith Mancone. Stay safe. Be well. Talk again next week.
You've been listening. listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.